Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. As you know, all of these podcasts would not happen without all of my amazing sponsors, and I wouldn't have those sponsors if my audience didn't go to their websites, purchase things from their websites, and support those sponsors. And I'm so thankful that all of you have been doing exactly that. There's not a single month that goes by that I don't receive feedback from companies like Luxon MX. You can save 10% off every single order with Big MX 2025 at checkout. And same thing with Backyard Designs. Those guys are amazing. And now they also do custom paint jobs. They do custom wraps on your helmet, and that can be discounted as well. Big MX 24 saves you 24%. I talked to Jared about making that a 25% discount code. Yeah, it's only one extra percent, but hey, it all helps, right? So go to the website. As of right now, it's BigMX24, but we're looking to change that for February. Same goes with Racetech, guys. If you mention Racetech when ordering parts, you're going to save, I believe it's 15%. Same goes with WUSA. If you're looking at a brand new set of wheels, maybe if you're just looking for you can take your stock hubs and get a set of wheels built, mention Big MX Radio, you're going to save some money. Guts Racing, Big MX 20 saves you 20% at checkout. So far it's been really amazing working with some of these companies. We don't have a discount code for Moose Racing yet, but we're looking forward to working with those guys throughout the year, and they've got some great offerings on the gear side of things as well as the hard parts. If you haven't checked out Moose Racing's hard parts, honestly, they've got some of the best in the business and certainly some with the best bang for your buck. So I would seriously go check those guys out. We're also working with race winning brands this year. A couple of companies that have sort of jumped on board to be advertisers here on Big MX Radio, Pro-X. Not only the pistons, but also the myriad of hard parts that they also have, as well as Recluse clutches. If you're in the woods, you're going to want a Recluse. It's just the thing to use out there when you're going over the roots and the rocks and all that fun stuff. A Recluse clutch is something that you're definitely going to want to look into if you're doing some more of that. But we're about 2 minutes into this podcast. We haven't talked about the racing, so let's get straight to it. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to support my sponsors. Would not be able to do it without them, and would not be able to do it without listeners like you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. I am your host, Brad Gebhardt. With me on the line, he is the voice of AMA Arena Cross. You've seen him on Racer TV calling all kinds of mud races. Those are called GNCCs. He's the one, the only, Zach Heron. Zach, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. I'm glad to be back. Excited to talk some Supercross with you, maybe dive into some Arena Cross, some GNCC. You never know what we're going to get into, right? We start going and God knows where it leads. But glad to be back. Glad to be chatting it up with you. And man, do we have a lot of awesome racing to cover.
Yes, sir. And you're right. This is a lazy river of a podcast. More often than not, might take a few turns left or right to maybe explore some autistic level of recall when it comes to the sport of motocross, regardless of the decade. Maybe we just dive into, the fact that we are inside 30 days from the very first GNCC of the year.
We are. We're getting down to the nitty gritty. The teams are set. Riders are kind of making those final preparations. And as I'm sure you're well aware, I think everybody is anxiously awaiting to see the return of Caleb Russell now on the Blue Crew and see what the GOAT is able to do. I mean, I think if Ricky made a return, I don't know exactly what people would be looking at, but Caleb has stayed in shape. He's been whooping the rest of the competition in shape, which means he knows their strengths, but he knows their weaknesses as well. So, yeah, round one's going to be a very telltale sign as far as the rest of the season. Mikey Waynes, he's been there 7-8 years now, I think, this year, and he's like, man, guys, just be glad you weren't here in the time when Caleb Russell was dominating. It was the most boring 3 hours you've ever announced in your life. I'm hoping we don't get that, but best believe I want to see KR battling for some podiums and trying to grab some wins as well.
With all respect, there, Mikey, I don't know how many. Well, you know what? I know he's done a lot of announcing in not only GNCC but also motocross. But I'll stack any 65cc 7-9 LCQ up against a 3-hour race with the GNCC boys. That is a tough wank, man. I swear to God, when the kids are tough. Out there, yeah, like 19 kids on the line, there's a country mile between every single one of them, and you got to make that sound interesting. That is the challenge of announcing. And yeah, you're gonna dust off the pipes in Arena Cross shortly, but I'm wearing my Mesquite MX hoodie right now. Nothing has changed from the last time we talked. I did have a long conversation with one, Brent Stallo. But as you'd expect, there were no solid answers there as far as will it or not. I will be in attendance for the now third running of the World Mini GP in Mesquite, Nevada. I would love to be there. I don't know if I have to personally fly down to Georgia in order to break Kevin Kelly's legs, but short of that, there's a chance I'll be there. On top of the fact that I triumphantly walked into my old employer just this last Friday and went, deuces, I need my pen cut back. And now we're full time remote here from the old homestead.
Hey, absolutely. Yeah, 100% commitment to the Big MX Studios, and I love to see it. Nobody's bothering me about the cattle that I don't have anymore. It's great.
That's right.
But it's going to be exciting, man. Like
I wish
you had
recorded that phone call too, by the way.
Hey, man, you ought to hear the accent that I put. Yeah, you know, I talked to old Bradley, and man, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a great looking machine, but I can't financially afford it right now. Okay. I'll get back in touch with you in a few years. But no, I made you look good, but I don't blame you, man. I think we all know this is where the passion's at for you, and you got to chase it. So I'm excited to see it. And yeah, like you said, man, we've got a big weekend coming up for Arena Cross. We've got the AMA Arena Cross Amateur National Championship coming up this weekend in Guthrie, Oklahoma. Yep. And so I'm excited to see this. This first year with me with Arena Cross, every location's a new location for me. And this location in Guthrie, I mean, I think in our last round, we had 22 to 24 second lap times. They're telling me that we're running like a minute and 2 second lap times here. So this is basically a supercross size arena. And obviously going to have one night of pro racing. We'll see whether or not Michael Hicks is able to continue to bring the heat to Vince Freese. Ryan Brees battling some knee injuries. Austin Politelli, he's ticked off. He's ready to try to snag a win without any kind of technicalities. So we'll see, man. I'm excited for the pro stuff, but man, the future generation, this is one of only two opportunities to get an AMA national title. You've got Loretta's on the outdoor side, and I'll give credit where it's due. Sean Smith and the entire crew there at Arena Cross, they are really trying to continue to build this up and make it an event that riders don't just end up at, they want to go to. They're circling it on their calendar months in advance. We've got some great trainers, some impressive kids, a lot of Cobra Elite kids coming as well. It's going to be a great weekend all the way around.
Oh yeah, no, you're going to have the Jet Rouse of the world. You're going to have, Ezra Armbruster, all those kids, pouring the coals through those Cobras, not only the 50s, but the 65s as well. And, honestly, a track, like, especially Arena Cross is almost like purpose built for those little machines. They can really like at that level, at that skill set, they can jump everything that, like, aside from maybe the finish line, but I know a few of them usually do try to, especially on the super mini class. Like you see the super minis every weekend, and they're part of the night show for the pros, correct?
Yeah, so in the pro, we have the AX85 class as well as the Micro Open Limited class. So we see the 85s and the 50s.
Yeah.
And yeah, man, it's most of the time we see the leaders in that super mini class hitting the catapult. Our last round had the biggest finish line that I had seen thus far this season. They weren't quite able to hit it, but they toned it down just a little bit for Sunday. No, actually, and that's how you know it was big, was they didn't even bother. And even Sunday, they toned it down just a little bit, but the 85 still couldn't quite make it over. But if you really want to get excited for something, breaking news here, I'm hearing rumors of an Arena Cross staff ride day with the Stark Vargs. So I might be a little banged up the next time I see you. Hopefully the jaw stays intact, because that's the moneymaker for me right now. But
yeah,
nothing like not riding for almost an entire year and then going into a discipline that you have no skills in. So we'll see what happens.
So how'd you hear about it if it was about Starks?
Whoa, I see what you did there. No, I'm excited for it, man. Gotten to ride one of those through the woods actually several years ago in Idaho for the Rider Co. launch. I mean, I'm talking like 45 seconds on it. It scared the hell out of me. I gave it back. I said, I'll stick to my YZ450 where it's safe, and ended up eating crap a few minutes later on that. But nonetheless, now I'm excited for it, man. We'll see whether or not I end up spinning any laps, but I've got the Moose Racing gear packed, and we're saying some prayers. We got a lot of duct tape for the knee. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, keep it all together, and yeah, I expect a full review and report once you've put it back on its charging stand.
Exactly.
Is it about that time to start talking some Supercross here?
I guess we might as well. That's why we're here, right? And God, those guys have put on a show for us already. Yeah. But let's pick where we're starting, Brad. There's so many options.
Well, the 250 main goes before the 450 main, so let's just start with those guys. And the lead story, I don't know if it's the fact that we're 2 rounds into this thing and Hayden Deegan hasn't even come into the second spot. He hasn't gotten second or first in either one of these races, or the fact that we have a sophomore, number 23 in your program, likely number one in your hearts, especially if you come from Lake Havasu, Arizona, Julien Vomeer. KTM Factory Racing, yeah, just bringing that program back to prominence with a win. And he looked amazing doing it the entire, like he wins his heat race. He goes out there and wins the main event. Yeah, I was extremely impressed with him. Jordan Smith was your whole shooter. I love when people call it that. Either way, it was all juju all the time, with Hayden Dean rounding out the top three. So let's talk about that podium.
Man, so yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, Julien Vomeer jujued on that beat, no pun intended. I mean, the guy is. Here's what I like about Julien Vomeer is when the helmet's off, right? And you can tell a lot about a rider where they're at mentally, confidence wise. Obviously, under the tutelage of Davey Millsaps, who is another rider that had confidence, right? He came up through the ranks amateur wise. He was one of the kids to watch, and you never really saw Davey up here or down here. And that's kind of what we're seeing this season with Hayden Deegan, right? And obviously we know Hayden's a bit of a media star, right? He kind of plays that role as well, which I think is important and I'm a fan of. But we've seen Hayden. Hey, he's up here, he's talking a little smack. He's, oh, Levi Kitchen's running scared, this, that, and the other thing. Then he finds himself on the ground this weekend. I'm embarrassed you guys even had to watch that. His first interview, the first interview of the broadcast for San Diego. He's saying, I got my ass kicked. Like, he's a guy that loves giving us these sound bites, but we've
Yeah.
seen the peaks and the valleys right now from Danger Boy. Whereas Juju, he's just been riding that middle range. I don't think that there's a ton of,
He's
there's
the bass drum
pressure.
right now.
Exactly. There's pressure, but they're not expectation. And he knows the expectation that's there is deserving. He knows, hey, yeah, I should be in the top five. I should be battling for podiums and wins. And man, the kid just seems to stay cool, calm, and collected when the pressure gets added. I mean, being able to jump up and snag that top spot in practice qualifying, dude, those are the little victories. And he's not walking up on the podium talking to Haley going, yeah, what's up, Danger Boy? Like, just got beat again. Nope, just, hey, yeah, we're here to do a job. I just did it and I plan to do it again tonight. Thank you very much. Best of luck to everybody. That is the kind of guy that I can get behind. That's the kind of kid that I like to support and see do well. Don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of Danger Boy as well, but I think this Julien Vomeer is not only very dangerous right now for the 250 championship, man, I think this kid's going to be a threat for years to come. As we're all well aware, he's got an incredible jet ski background. And while I don't necessarily think the jet ski riding transfers a ton to riding a motorcycle, the pressure's all the same. I believe this kid's a world
No,
champion
he was good at it. That's the thing. Like,
on jet skis. So
success is success.
this isn't a new world for him. You best believe those jet ski guys, they want to win just as bad as professional motorcycle racers want to win. So he's not new to the pressure of being on the top step of the podium and leading and all of these things that come with it that we see some of these younger riders struggling with. So absolutely, I'm excited to see what he's able to do. I do think we're going to see a response from Danger Boy. Obviously, the kid's got a ton of speed. He's going to limit some of these mistakes. I think we're going to see him on the top step before it's all said and done. Jordan Smith, we jump over to him. He's a Carolina native, big fan. He looks comfy on that Triumph, but
It's the
we need a few weeks.
resurgence.
Yes. And I think it is. I think this was a perfect move for Jordan Smith. There's a lot of talk about, Jordan crashes a lot. Jordan, he's got the speed, but he can't control the speed. And I think what we've seen so far is Jordan answering that call. Yes, we haven't seen him take crazy chances to try to make a pass, but we also haven't seen him face first in the dirt. And I will take that all day long. I want to see Jordan, even if he's not holding up a number one plate at the end of the season, I want to see him at the end of the season. I want to give him a chance to go out there and do well in outdoors. I think he's a great member of this Triumph team. Excited to see what he's able to do throughout the rest of the season, and wouldn't be surprised to see him on the top step in weeks to come.
No, not at all. And I think that's completely going to depend on what Hayden Deegan's going to be able to say about it. I think you're totally right. He hasn't been able to deliver that win yet. That's gotta be, it is coming. There's anyone who's starting to doubt this kid, check yourself real quick because, he's been the top step, the last couple of years. Maybe not in Supercross. He doesn't have Supercross championships, but he's your two-time SMX 250 champion, world champion. And I have full faith that he's going to be able to figure this out. But, it just hasn't come together for him yet. And it's very, I wouldn't say concerning, but it's a bit puzzling for in so many ways. I don't think it's a pressure thing. I don't think it's a bike thing. It's the, if, as far as I know, it's the exact same bike that they've had in years previous. Is it almost like a self-imposed pressure that Hayden's putting on right now? You just sort of build up the crowd so much that you have to deliver bangers. And then when something goes sideways, it's a catastrophe.
In a way, I kind of compare Danger Boy to an established Conor McGregor, right? Conor came from nothing. He was a plumber. That humble beginning Conor, I love, right? The guy was just, I remember him yelling 60 G's, baby. He was freaking out. But once he was this champion, once he was the guy, which is kind of the persona that Hayden has taken on, obviously, like you said, SMX champion. We've been
You can't
pumping
do
up the
nothing.
SM. Yeah, exactly. He's walking with the swagger, this, that, and the other thing, but there is this burden of expectation that comes with that. Sure, it's a self-imposed burden, but a burden nonetheless. And I agree. I think Hayden came in not quite expecting the fight that he had. Think about what the media's been saying, especially when the news that Levi Kitchen was going to be lining up. Oh, you might as well hand the number one plate out now. I hate when people say this. Go back to the Great Outdoors too, right? They're talking about Kevin Windham. People are saying Ricky's going to win. Who's going to get second? That's not what this sport is about. And Julien Bomaire, Jordan Smith, several of these riders are showing that. Cole Davies, we'll get to him in a second. Another rider that is showing, hey, this isn't over until it's over. And what Hayden Deegan is doing has now set the tone of he's fighting off the back foot, right? He didn't get the first strike. Now he's trying to shake off a headshot. He's trying to regain composure, and he's got to be able to calm the nerves, get the heart rate back down, and come out swinging like we know he can. I got no doubt this kid is going to win this season, but he has got to actually shake things off. I actually liked to see him just a little bit defeated after that race in San Diego because it was a, hey, I got to calm down. I actually have to figure this out. A1, he didn't seem worried about it all. Hey, no, it was a bad night. You know what it is. Well, we're going to come back. We're going to whoop ass next week. But he didn't. And then all of a sudden, he made simple mistakes. He almost got decapitated by one of his teammates going shooting off to the right side of the track. Like so
Dude, that
many
was so
different things could
scary.
happen. Oh, man, that was close. And so I think Hayden Deegan needs to take a couple deep breaths, right? Needs to chill out and get back to doing what Hayden Deegan does. So, yeah, I do think a lot of it is self-imposed, but I think this weekend was a big one for Hayden to have to reset and get back to doing what Hayden Deegan does.
Yeah, no, I think he does exactly that. He's gonna be in Anaheim, for Anaheim 2. It's Anaheim 2 always has such a different feel than Anaheim 1. There's a lot less buzz. There's a lot less people asking for passes. There's usually a lot less people in, maybe not through the pits. It's obviously usually not as well attended as Anaheim 1. Anaheim 1 is just like that. That's the beginning of it all, right? That is all the hype, all everything, all right now. And you don't get that as much with Anaheim 2. I think it's going to be all business. And I'm going to call it right now. I think we see Hayden Deegan able to compose himself. And yeah, he had a fifth. Now he's at a third. Would not be surprised to see him compose himself, get to the top step of the podium. But now he's going to have a Jordan Smith who is going to have a ton of confidence rolling into this round. Like he's going to have his game face on. And last time I checked, if you and I might be Hayden Deegan fans or had not have a grudge against the kid, but last time I checked, Jordan Smith, not exactly. I don't think they're on Christmas card lists with each other right now. And Julian Beaumier with a ton of wind in his sails. He's now had a third and a first. He's got the points lead. He's going to have the red plate. And you know he's not going to give up without a fight. He's got his starts dialed in as well. And before we get on and talk about the 450 class at all, let's talk about that Cole Davies. Like, kid goes out and gets himself a heat race win. Earlier, a month ago, he was racing futures. Now, I'm just going to jump into the big boy class and I'm going to be a top five guy. Like, if you're a couple of the competitors, you're just mind blown that this kid has basically just walked out of nowhere and said, yeah, I'm just going to play with you guys. Is that cool?
Yeah, it is kind of interesting to me to hear. And I know obviously as a broadcaster and announcer, you have certain storylines that you have to run and hype up, but you know, there's a lot of shock at how impressive Cole Davies is, as young as he is. But if I remember correctly, you know, Adam Cincirillo, I believe, was the same age and won the main event of his first ever Supercross. So this isn't something that we haven't ever seen before.
That's true.
But it does seem like Cole Davies, as far as within the last 3 years or so, has come out of nowhere. Obviously, we know he was, you know, a grab from Daniel Blair in the KTM group. And then once again, Star kind of came in. But
are you Davies, saying New Zealand's nowhere?
No, but I definitely think
he has some angry Kiwis in the comments.
No. Come on. I love the Kiwis, right? But what I am saying is I think even the Kiwis would agree this was our guy that we knew had what it took, but on a global scale, we hadn't really seen the attention that he deserved. But when he got the shot, man, did he answer, right? You go back to that battle between himself and Gavin Towers, who was on Star at the time for that Supercross Futures race. He performed under pressure and he acted like it was just nothing. Hey, this is what I'm here to do. So then he moves over to the Star rig. From what I've heard, the guy has been, obviously we know it's a competitive atmosphere when you're riding for Star Racing, right? You're at the practice track together. You're battling who I think we all knew was going to be his main competition, Hayden Deegan. There are several times that I have heard he was outrunning Hayden Deegan regularly at the practice track. So practice track is great.
I wonder if that made the vlog.
Right. Practice track is great, but now it's time to get to the real deal, right? I'm sure if you're in Hayden Deegan's corner, hey, he's a practice guy, right? It's race time. You've got this all figured out. But Cole Davies showed up and said, hey, I'm actually quite comfortable in front of the people, under the lights, with all the fans, with all the media. I will say interviews could use just a little bit of work, but they always could, right? No shame in that game. But, yeah, I think the kid went out. I don't think he was surprised to get a heat race win. He seemed like you guys are all so shocked, but you know, I know that I could do this. And so he goes out in the heat race and man, this is only round two. This kid starts to get comfortable running up front. He starts to believe a little bit more. And quite frankly, you know, Hayden Deegan, like we said, fighting off the back foot points wise, Hayden Deegan isn't a teammate that you say, hey, he's in a championship battle. I'm going to let him go. Best belief, Cole Davies is looking over saying, you might have the same colors as me, but we're battling for the same thing and only one of us can have it. And so I am, as always, with any rookie performing well or not, consistency is going to be the name of the game. Can he continue to back up these results? Can he continue to be up front off of the start? Be curious to see if he doesn't get that start, what his ability to slice and dice through the pack looks like. But for right now, only looking at what we've seen so far, dude, my hat's off to him. I'm pumped to see Cole Davies at the front of the field.
And on a completely side note, like, can we just throw a little bit of respect on the fact that they've been running the vented plates for no reason at all?
Love it. Love it. Kyle Bitterman's running it in Arena Cross. Every time I see it, I'm like, God, I love it so much.
It's so good. Like, I remember the first time I saw a vented front number plate, I was like, I must have this.
That's a need. That's not a want. That's a need.
Yeah, like, there's Like I remember back in like 2005, no, it was like 2006, 2007. Like there was like vented everything. Like Sycra
Vaguely, I
was
was like
just,
9 years old, but yeah, I vaguely remember
But
it.
like literally, like I think like it wasn't even just like the fact that like they didn't just take a regular number plate and like put venting on it. Like every like Carmichael finished off his career with vented plates, but they were like actually like manufactured that way. Same thing with Stu. I think when like the 450 Nationals that he did race before doing his perfect season. Although I don't think he ran a vented plate for his perfect season. I think I would remember that. But either way, I love the vented plate. What I don't love is when I'm just like riding past the mechanics area and there's a pit board, and you know as well as I do, if you hit like if a pit board hits your shin or like the edge of that thing is like as hard as you like you're coming, those guys are flying by what 40 miles an hour, 50, like a straight shot like that right across the mechanics area.
This is
Smoking Joe Shimoda.
no bullshit here. So this has probably been a month ago. I'm at my dad's house and we've got what we call the moto closet where we keep a lot of our gear. We keep some pit boards, stuff like that. I'm trying to reorganize it because it was an absolute mess. And we've got up higher up is where some of the pit boards are, but it was like a little command hook, right? So I'm moving something around. I bump into it and I don't even know if I'm wearing shoes. If I am, they're like thin little hey dudes. This pit board falls down and the edge of the pit board smacks my toes. Dude, I thought it cut two of them off. I mean, I'm MFing, GDing, I'm screaming, crying, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, man, like that hurt. Like, and what I was thinking at the time was I'm like, man, dudes like get pissed off and break these things over their knees. Like they hurt. Then obviously we see what happened to Joe, who I'm now calling Bad Mofo Joe, because dude, first of all, we got to talk a
Got a
little bit
million
about the A
nicknames.
the
I don't
A1
think anything's ever
performance,
gonna stick
right?
though.
The Joe Show was on full effect at A1. So pumped to see him grab that win after such a tough year last year. Everybody there at HRC stuck with him. They've obviously been working hard to get him comfortable. And Joe is a much more kind of quiet, reserved kind of guy. So I feel like it's tougher for those guys to bounce back from that. But man, did he. Comes out swinging at A1. And then, man, he was looking good. I believe third or fourth in qualifying when it happened. And then all of a sudden, the camera goes to him and he's sitting there. And they thought he was just catching his breath, but you clearly see he's holding his hand, his wrist. And I'm like, something's not right. Man, I'm sure you've seen the picture by now. His pinky finger is destroyed. I mean,
Oh yeah, that is fully
it's
broken.
it is destroyed. And I do want to touch on, you know, there's a lot of talk about penalties and punishment for the mechanic and stuff like that. Do I think it sucks? Absolutely. Do I think that maybe there is room for guidelines regarding how far a pit board can come out, when it should come out? Sure. I don't know what that is. I don't know how that's regulated, but all in all, I do think it's just an unfortunate accident that happened. It wasn't, you know, obviously immediately everybody was like, oh, it had to be Deegan's mechanic. I don't think it was. I don't even know if we know whose it was, but
No,
I
I think
think
it was at the far end.
at
So
the
I'm
far
thinking
end,
it's a Yamaha. I think it was a Yamaha
I've
mechanic.
heard rumors. I've heard it was a star. I've heard it was somebody told me it was Cody Shock's mechanic. I don't know. I also don't really care, is where I'm at.
Yeah,
I don't
I'd
think
have
it
to
matters
slow it
because I
down.
don't think it was intentional. And so
No.
it's an unfortunate accident. I mean, a heartbreak there for the Honda team, but man, talk about heart of a lion going out there and dealing with whatever gets thrown your way. To say he makes the main event is a hell of a story. To get a top 10, a 7th place, and then show your finger, which I also think was a boss move to not even show your fingers until the race was done. Like, you look at that and see a 7th place, and you're like, what the hell is this dude made of? I mean, yeah, major props. Obviously, I do think it's going to ultimately derail the season a bit. I don't see a way that he's able to recover from that. Quite frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't need surgery sooner rather than later to protect that finger. As bad as the pinky looked, I wouldn't be surprised if surgery needs to happen soon. Hoping that it doesn't, hoping he's going to be able to line back up. But
Does he do the Travis
man.
Pastrana thing and race with a cast on?
No, I don't think we'll see that anymore. I
No,
also
I
don't
honestly, I
agree
hate to
with the
say it,
one
but he
hand
played.
guard. Wait a second. I am a hand
Yeah.
guard guy. Put them both on, man. Put them both on. They
Yeah,
look
don't do the
good.
one
They've
hand
matched.
guard. That
Yeah,
is silly.
it confused me. I couldn't ride like that. Like, I've snapped a hand guard off crashing before, and it just, it miscombobulates. Your front fender is off a little bit after a crash. All of a sudden, you can't figure out which way is straight. So props to him for being able to deal with that too. But yeah, all in all, the result, incredible given the circumstances, but it's going to be tough for Joe moving forward in the season, I think.
I think it's going to be incredibly tough. As much as you want to soldier on, a couple of bad weekends and the championship would sort of pass him by regardless. Not to say that like you got a seventh, maybe he's able to battle back. But we still have two more rounds before the series goes east, where he'd be able to heal up and all that. I don't know. Like you said, if he ends up having to need surgery, the finger's probably in more disrepair or more chance of re-injury, or making things worse by continuing to ride. Would not be surprised if you see a post this week with Joe's hand in a in, like immobilized and on the mend. Hey, like. Hats off to him for going out there and like, yeah, like you said, keeping it under wraps, not really showing people what was really going on until afterwards. You find that stuff like that all the time with like, say, like the Super Bowl. And then, the quarterback, he threw the game winning pass with a separated shoulder and you're just, it adds to the legend. So, I was bummed to see he's third in the points right now. He is 7 points out. I don't know if this season's going to be able to continue for Smoking Joe Shimoda.
Well, and you got to think big picture too. Obviously, I think SMX is the goal. Does it now, gets it fixed. He's not bad outdoors, and so go possibly be able to come out swinging for outdoors. Really put in some good results there. Possibly. I mean, dude, those fingers are weird. The small bones are when they have to be operated on. They're very unique as far as the complication that goes along with that process. So hopefully it would be something where it's like, hey, let's get this thing done now. And you're able to, even if he doesn't make round one of the outdoors, you're able to participate and then really try to make something happen in SMX. But yeah, ultimately you got a feel for the team. Especially, talk about going from the penthouse to the shit house. Like, dude, you go from the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. And that's the sport in so many ways. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see for sure.
Definitely. Other notables before we move over to the 450 class, the return to the top 10 of Michael Mosman, ninth place overall. Like he's been basically like I like we did this podcast, the preseason podcast. We didn't even know where this guy was, where he was racing, if he was still on Star. Maybe that's shame on both of us for not being up on all things Michael Mosman, but seriously, it's
I
been
don't think we
radio
mentioned
silence.
Julian. I don't think we mentioned Julian Bomer either. So I'm putting that on us. Okay.
Fair
But
enough.
yes, I agree. Michael Mosman, again, almost similar to what I feel like with Jordan Smith. I like the slow burn, right? This guy's got skills, he's got speed, but we need to put a season together. And so for right
Yes.
now, I'm not putting any pressure on Michael. Go out, do what you can do. If it's a top 10, great. If it's top five, even better. If it's a podium, holy crap. But for right now, just stay healthy, man. The kid's got a ton of skill. Super nice guy. I mean, I never met him. I've actually talked to his brother Josh. He came and did a GNCC. But Michael just seems so friendly, man. Anytime you hear him on a podcast, just super nice, down to earth. But that doesn't always translate to being a badass on a bike. And he is a badass on a bike. So I just want to see him healthy. I want to see him get through an entire year healthy. I think Star is in the same mindset. I don't know how much pressure they're putting on him. Obviously, they want him to do as well as possible, and they know there is the potential for him to win, but I don't think it's something where they want him to put it all on the line right now and throw away an impressive 2025 in total. So, yes, welcome back to the top 10, but let's take it easy. Let's keep stacking top 10s, maybe build to a top five. And then next thing you know, by maybe the season's, you know, some of those East-West showdowns, some of the later rounds, maybe all of a sudden then you're able to show a wheel and put in a fight towards the front five, even a podium.
100%. So also shout out to Brad West and Nico Koch. Never heard of you in my entire life. He's from Germany. Puts it in the main event. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that if that's not the first main event for Brad West, that's definitely his career best with a 14th. A lot of Yamahas in the 250 class. Not only privateers, but you have not one, two, but three different teams, four different teams running the Yamahas. And in the main event, you got TJ Albright in there, a couple of privateers with him and Brad West. You got the Club MX boys with Reynolds and Shock. Mosman, he's in there with Star Racing Yamaha. Same thing with Davies and Deegan. And then, of course, you have the Toyota of Redlands. Bar X used to be Suzuki. Now is they're on Yamahas. And then don't forget about the Team Solitaire guys. So it's just Yamahas everywhere. They must have some sort of deal.
Yeah, a lot of crew with the blue crew for sure. But
yeah,
yes, there's something to be said about it. I mean, we've that stuff doesn't happen by accident. So clearly, Yamaha's doing something right from a bike standpoint, from a support standpoint, and you see a lot of them in the off-road side of things as well. We see several of them in the arena cross side. Obviously, right now we do have a little bit. It's blue and red, right? We've got some Hondas, we've got some Yamahas up at the front, but yeah, I think Yamaha is really stepping up all the way around, and I'm for it. I think it's a good group of people. Possibly going to even be doing some of the Blue Crew Invitationals this year. So I'm all about it. I know at the moment I don't own a Yamaha. I had YZ125, started on PW50, as most of us did. But I'm all about it. I support all the brands, and I support the brands that give back to the sport. And right now Blue Crew is doing just that. So. All right, that's all for 250s, unless you got anybody else that you're trying to burn and mention.
No.
Anybody?
All right. Last thing I'm going to say before we move over to the 450s is a nice little get well soon to Talon Hawkins. He snapped his femur, and that sucks. So
yeah, that was a tough night for that entire team. Avery Long, I think he rang his bell pretty good, but hopefully he'll be able to I think they might have said he was sitting out A2, but, you know, get some recovery. The concussions,
that was rough.
Yeah, it was rough. You know, it was rough because
he got body slammed by the bike.
Yeah, we had to rewind and see exactly what happened. But yeah, anytime they don't go back and show you that gives you a sign that it's not good. But even Talon Hawkins, as soon as I saw the replay, I was like, that's a femur, that's a tib fib, something. And so, yeah, best of luck to him. I believe he's already out of surgery and on the mend. So it's a brutal sport, man. It is a brutal sport.
Certainly is. But 450 class, we have just as many storylines. We have just as many amazing things. That was maybe one of the most memorable 450 main events that we've seen in quite some time. We had all the heavy hitters, at least most of them for the most part, at the top of the race. And yeah, you had like Eli Tomac and Jet Lawrence, not with the best of starts. So we got to see all kinds of battling, and with 7:35 to go in the race, we had a table set for two with Jet Lawrence and Eli Tomac, and Tomac was able to race away from him. I guess the only guy that we didn't have at the very top of the race was Chase Sexton, who went down right off the hop. So let's talk about it a little bit here. First lap, Chase Sexton, first of all, somehow misses the triple, doesn't get landed on. That could have been an absolute catastrophe. Wow. And then maybe still mentally dealing with heart rate spike, still in shock a couple corners later, ends up sort of, he just like dabs the foot. Actually, like, I've done this 1,000 times. This is like, I thought, is that 995 on the machine there? No, but it was the number four waffling himself up. Instead of crashing late while leading, he went down early while in fifth or sixth. Ends up, he was dead last after that, and able to salvage a sixth overall. Like, not the night that he's looking for, but he's not the points leader anymore. Now it's Eli Tomac. But before we talk about the battle that was, let's talk a little bit about Chase Sexton.
Man, it's It's a bummer. And I don't know any way to say it, but I do, and I'm glad to hear that you say it, because this has kind of been my view on the crash itself. I've watched the replay of Chase missing the triple, which I haven't seen what led to that. I believe there was some stuff in front of him. And if you watch, he's rolling up that third, and he's looking off of his left shoulder, because everybody kind of floats over to that left-hand side. What he doesn't even see is the Phoenix Racing Honda of Dylan Ferrandis, who deserves some credit, because there was maneuvering going on in the air to keep him from landing on Chase Sexton. But it's like right as he's coming, as Chase is turning his head back, Dylan lands. I don't care who you are. That is going to scare the shit out of you. And oh, yeah. you can be the most professional of professionals. Your heart rate's going to spike even more. Quite frankly, I'm amazed he didn't go down in that corner, because it's just like, it was so close. And that takes even the best of riders. It takes them a second. You know, a lot of the talk that we hear is riders learning to take a mistake and leave it back there. Leave it where it was and forget about it. But with this, I don't necessarily know if we want to call it a mistake. I do think Chase didn't hit the triple for a reason. But, man, it was just one of those that could have ended a career. That could have killed him. I mean, that was a huge jump, a lot of hang time.
You're going up, and they're coming down. It's Trey Kinnard all over again.
Exactly. And I mean, best believe these guys think about that stuff. They're well aware of the risks. So I believe it was that following corner he's going, and it is. It was just a simple little miscalculation. Looked like maybe the weight was a little off, and then when he dabs, the front end turns, it catches the edge of the rut. He's in the ground. Unfortunately, KLX's teammate, AP, along with him, it just, you know, it took a bad situation and it made it worse. Dead last, rolling back. And I mean, obviously, we've seen this guy go from, what, 41st to first. Like, he knows how to come through the pack. It wasn't over, but it did, you know, it kind of set the tone for the night. And I think looking through the rest of that race, we've now seen that those top guys have a pace that is not going to be easy to chase down. It's not going to be, you know, sure, you can get to a sixth place spot. I think if the finish line had been another straightaway further, he'd have been in the top five. He was right on Hunter Lawrence, who we know was under the weather. But all in all, damage control, keep your head up high. I mean, the thing about Chase is, in a lot of ways, similar to Julien Bomaire, he's running that middle ground. You know, this kid has gotten a lot of flack as far as mistakes, like you said, leading, going down. Most of the times, I'd say it's his fault. Like, it's simple little mistakes that sneak up
on him. He's copped to that as well.
Exactly, and I've got a ton of respect for him for that part. He calls it like it is. He doesn't give himself any breaks. He doesn't make excuses. So with this, I don't think this is going to shake Chase Sexton. I don't think it's going to, you know, the confidence is gone. I think he knows, hey, I am comfortable on the bike. And that was such a silly little mistake that, like, you and I could make, anybody could make. Like, it does happen. And so it's one of those deals. Hey, it happened. He shook it off. He kept charging forward. He made some good passes. He got inside the top 10. What is he, third in points now? Second, I think. If he's only like 1 or 2 points,
he's still second. Anybody, he's right there. Yeah.
So it's far from over. Great job recovering from that. Didn't let a bad situation with that crash. Yeah, didn't let a bad situation turn into a terrible situation. It wasn't a 12th, so we'll leave it at that. So all in all, I mean, sure, probably not the night he wanted, but I don't think he's crying when he goes home. I don't think he's throwing a temper tantrum when he gets back to the truck. It's shit happens. It's racing. We're focusing on A2 now.
Yeah, on to A2 for the 450 class. And like, it's Eli Tomac in what he's calling his swan song. This is his last trip around. He ain't going out without a fight. And he looks great. The bike looks awesome. And, I really liked what I saw from Eli Tomac. He has that outside line where he just goes like, yeah, I got places to be.
Upshifts, I swear, going in.
Yeah. Passing factory superstars on the outside is downright insulting. That's rude. Like, And he just goes out and does it. You're getting harassed by the new kid in town, the like Jet Lawrence right there. 7:30 to go. Tons of racing left. Walks away. Eli Tomac,
Yeah,
tell me about it.
that ET3, man, that was beast mode. That's and I mean, this guy's got it stamped. He's got it, you know, signed. When you see ET like that, that's not Eli Tomac anymore. That's the beast, and that's exactly what it was, man. He all day long, he looked like he had a confidence. He had a fire, and man, yeah, the first time I'm trying to remember exactly who he was getting around the first time he did that outside line, because I think that was the best he hit it all night, because it started to get a little hook about three quarters of the way through. But God, I stood up off cat. I'm like, holy crap. Like,
It
that was
was
deep.
that reminded me of Southwick when he was just there.
Beautiful. Just, I mean, I swear, like I said, I think the guy upshifted going into it. I mean, just rocketed all the way around. And if that lip had been a little bigger coming out of that corner, he probably could have tripled into the rhythm section. Like, it is just, those are the things that we'll look back on and say Eli Tomac was one of the best to ever do it. I mean, it's just, those are the kinds of things that Eli does. The
Reminds me of
creativity.
Villopoto when he does stuff like that.
Yes. And I mean, I was always a huge Villopoto fan, and
We
similar
know.
to Villo, he was steering a lot with the rear end. He's cutting down, but it's like as he's sliding the back end, he's already on the gas. It's not even finished sliding, and he's just opening that beast of a Yamaha up. And yeah, it was one of those deals where I knew he was coming to the front. I mean, I thought Cooper Webb looked good. I think Cooper's a little under the weather. He's obviously battling an injury that came into A1 with it, but I'm impressed with what I've seen with Cooper so far. I think this is a better start to a season than we've seen from him a lot. But man,
He's right there.
that was one of those nights Eli Tomac wasn't going to be denied. And I know that every single rider on the gate will look at you and say the same thing. And what I loved was the camaraderie between Jet Lawrence and Eli Tomac. I think one of the things that we take for granted is, you know,
I
yes,
was
these
happy
guys
to
are
see that as
warriors.
well.
They're, you know, it's, they don't hate each other, but at the same time, they ain't, you know, there's no smiling. There's no really, besides maybe Mookie and AP, like when these guys are on the gate, they hate each other. It is, you're taking money off of my table, food off of my plate, and it's, you know, it's war. But man, at the end of the day, Eli Tomac's got to be a hero for Jet Lawrence. You know, there's got to be a bit of this, you know, like, hey, this is one of the best to ever do it. And now I'm getting to battle with him. And even in Jed's social media post, he said he enjoyed learning from Eli Tomac. He's back there. We know Jet wants to beat him. We know Jet wants to say, hey, I am the new kid. I'm coming to take that spot from you. But the old wily vet said, son, watch this. And he put on a clinic. And I think Jet Lawrence drove home chatting about how badass Eli Tomac is and how awesome he was riding. And it's like, yes, Jet doesn't like getting second. He doesn't like getting beat. But man, that's one of those nights where they can look and be like, you know what? I'm just glad to be a part of that. And so great ride from both of them. Eli Tomac, you don't want to give that guy a lot of confidence, though. And he just showed he can straight up beat Jet Lawrence. So how is that going to set a tone moving forward for the rest of the season? That's what I'm interested to see.
Absolutely. But on that very same point, with everybody who was, I think there was a lot of people sort of like breathing a sigh of relief after Anaheim won. They're like, oh, finally Jet has some adversity. Finally Jet has something that he has to work through. He hates his motorcycle. We're gonna have some different winners this year. And then he's right there. Like he's faster in qualifying. He's fast in his heat race. And then he's just hunting down, Eli Tomac. Like I'll say this, as much as I was impressed with Eli Tomac, I am now worried that if Jet Lawrence continues to figure things out more with the motorcycle, we're going to see a lot of the number one up front. And it's going to take, like, in order for anyone else to take the championship away from him, it's going to take either some mistakes by him, or it's going to require everybody else being on top of their game every single night.
Yeah, Jet Lawrence, you can count him out, but you'd be a damn fool. I'll put it like that. There's I tell you what, really, where I was like, uh-oh, in I believe it was first qualifying, that triple quad, he hit the triple, the first triple, overjumped it just a little bit, and in a nanosecond, he scrubbed off the quad, tripled, And then in that next corner, there was a little roller in the inside. And Jet hit the single and jumped the corner. Those are – we talk about the outside line being things that Eli Tomac can do. Those are the things that Jet Lawrence can do. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, no. Oh, no. I'm pulling up DraftKings. I'm like, wait a second. I need to move some bets around because that shows a comfort and a creativity that Jet only has when he's feeling good. And so, yes, I agree. I think if Jet continues to make improvements like this, it could be bad. But now Eli's got some confidence. Like you said, Eli looks so comfortable on that star bike right now. This is exactly what we want, right? Chase is looking, you know, everybody compares it to the Honda Chase as far as comfort and the ability to attack. That little mistake, I'm not putting a lot of merit to that. It happens. It is what it is. And so Chase looks good, feels good on the bike. Jet looking good, feeling better on the bike. Eli, freaking Eli Tomac, man. Like, he's feeling good. He's at peace, which is another thing. He doesn't really have any pressure. Like, if this is the final trip, okay, I'm going to do what I can and that's it. But there's also that, hey, if I'm still winning and kicking ass, you know, I think there's still a spot on the end of the piece of paper I can sign at. So, man, this is what we've been waiting for. This is what we've been asking for. I think Cooper's going to get better. I want to see Hunter Lawrence step up a little bit. I know he was under the weather and you know, arguably even questioning riding in San Diego. So I do think there's a lot more on the table for him. Hopefully he's making some of the same strides with the bike that Jet is. This is what we want to see. I want to say I've been impressed with Jason Anderson too. I feel like we've seen a lot of fight out of him these first two rounds. And that guy, I'm not going to necessarily say a championship contention, but man, when he starts feeling comfy and starts feeling like he deserves a spot in the fight, you can't count El Hombre out. And yes, I say Hombre.
Fair enough. What ended him back up, like all the way back into 13th though?
I don't know.
I'm trying to look at the
Did he go down somewhere? I don't think they saw it. They said it on the broadcast, but I thought I saw him in the back of the screen in one shot picking the bike back up. But I can't say that 100%.
The graph they use for the lap charts is not easy to like. He's supposed to be in red. And then they just, like, I don't even see. Oh, yeah, no, Anderson. Yeah, so Anderson was 7th on lap, whatever the hell that's supposed to be, say like lap 15 or so, and then just like loses a couple of spots and then loses, even more. Yeah, that's really dumb. They have the names over top of like the last five laps, so it's like blurred out. You can't really see. He just like steadily lost spots towards the end of the race.
Well, and there were some weird things that happened. Like, I had no idea that Plessinger crashed again. Like, apparently he hit his head pretty good, and that's why he exited the race. And on the broadcast, they were saying it was because he was sick. And so, and I do think there's something that needs to be said about that sickness too, because it does seem like there was, you know, a little bit of the creeping crud going around the pits or whatever. And so, I think that's just start of the season stuff. Everybody's getting back into traveling, so hopefully all that will be cleared out within not necessarily the next week, but within the next few weeks. And so. But again, I'm not saying that I think Jason Anderson is going to start snatching wins, steal championship away, but I do think that he's a thorn in the side of some of these championship contenders.
I completely agree. These guys have bought themselves a little bit of time. Jet Lawrence still 10 points back of the championship. You've got all of your heavy hitters who are championship contenders at the very front, including the likes of Ken Roczen, who has been, he's been consistent both races so far. He's got himself a second and a fourth. He's currently sitting fourth in points, third in points. He's actually only 2 points back of the championship lead. And this just in, there are more Suzukis in the main event than there are Kawasaki's, and that makes me upset.
Wow. I was not aware of that statistic. But yeah, Kenny is looking sehr gut, if you will. And this is similar to a Tomac thing where, man, when he's having fun and he's feeling comfortable, the guy is dangerous. Obviously, they've talked about some factory parts that he's been able to now get from Suzuki, and it just seems at home. And that's all there is with Kenny is from the beginning, it's just been comfort. When he's having fun and he's comfortable, he is deadly. And so, you know, we heard him on the podium. Getting that second at A1 was just what he wanted. Obviously, I know he'd like to be on the podium, but I don't think he was far off of the podium in San Diego. So knocking on the door of a third place finish, another podium, still in the fight, 2 points back from the championship lead. Nobody wants to talk about it, but the Suzuki is competitive. I know, you know, it gets a lot of flack, gets a lot of crap talk, but at the end of the day, the yellow machine is just as much able to fight as anything else, especially when you put the 94 on it. So, yeah, I don't think that he is somebody that shouldn't be mentioned. I think that he's going to be somebody that's not mentioned a lot, and I think he's okay with that. I think he's kind of starting to move a little more into that Cooper Webb type era where it's like, hey, don't talk about me. It's fine. Doubt me. It's cool. Watch this. And we've been watching, and he's been putting on a performance for us. So, yeah, things are not out of contention for the number 94. And I tell you what, A2, I think, I usually use that opening four rounds as really establishing who's in the fight. Man, if we can have five riders that are all genuinely in the fight of this championship, this is going to be one of the seasons to watch. A lot of people go back to 2005, 2025 is backing it up once again. Two decades later, just as intense, just as many, if not more, contenders. Man, we're just lucky to be here at this time in the sport.
I'm not okay with the fact that Bar-to-Bar 05 is 20 years old now. That is – no, I refuse. No thanks.
Wrong.
I renounce that fact. I will not allow myself to believe that it's been 20 years since we saw two strokes win Supercross races. Actually kind of like when you, I've watched Bar-to-Bar 05 like 1,000 times. Every time I watch it, I remember, I'm like, oh, like, cause I always think to myself, like, how was Ricky able to win the 05 championship? Because like Chad was really good. Like, you defending champ, you have Stu in there, but obviously like Stu gets hurt. That's completely beside the point. But I always forget that, like Ricky gets, I think he gets third at the first round. It goes Wyndham, LaRocco, RC. And then, but Chad gets, like DNFs that race. So he gets 1 point. Like he's behind the eight ball the entire season after that. I don't think he was ever in the points lead even.
Yeah. It's, And
RC also gets like 11 wins.
The little things that will bat well, and I'm not necessarily saying the way the season played out, but as far as just the hype coming into it, right? You had all of these contenders that were in good spots on their teams, the way they felt. And with this, I think it's the same thing. We, of course, after A1, we find out, oh, this dude had a practice crash. This dude's sick. You know, it's the way it goes. I'd like to see that change a little bit with now the sports betting. And I'm curious to see whether there are adjustments to that as far as, you know, openness and transparency between riders and
not
teams.
In this sport.
I know, but we'll see. But nonetheless, yeah, I think it's a deal where we do seem to have the opportunity for a lot of riders to be able to compete for wins on a consistent weekend basis. And the more things start to jumble around, the more it's going to less be about who can rack off as many wins as they can. Now, obviously, if you're doing what Ricky did, 11 wins, yeah, sure, you're going to win. But then it starts to be who can manage their bad days. Can the sixth place be the worst finish for Chase Sexton? Can the 12th place needs to be the worst finish for Jet Lawrence? You know what I mean? These are the kind of things where now when the cream of the crop is so close, you know, you're splitting hairs between these guys. You have to be able to limit the damage each and every weekend, even if you're not on the podium. So that's what it's going to come down to. Consistency is the name of the game when you have 4 to 5 riders that all feel they could be holding up a number one plate at the end of the season.
Certainly, my friend. So who else jumps off the page at you in the 450 class? Shout out to Kyle Chisholm for just continuing to chiz. You have a couple of betas in there. Honestly, like neither one of those guys are performing to the level that I thought they would. Bloss was able to pick himself back up. He ended up going to the LCQ, correct? Because Freezy freezed him.
I remember correct. Yeah, I was about to say, I think old Vince, Vinced him and,
he's invincible.
As far as anybody else that really jumps out at me, Curious to see the
Surprised we haven't seen
progression.
more flashes from Justin Cooper.
Yeah, I was a little shocked as far as the finish goes. Like, we saw him up front in, I can't remember if that was a main or a heat race for just a little bit, but the rapid pace that he went backwards did kind of catch me off guard. It just seems like the intensity's not there for him. We know the guy's got one lap speed for days, but I was kind of surprised to see how quickly he got shuffled back. So I'd like to see
Yeah,
him
and he
step
was
up a
just
little
like he
bit more.
started 12th and stayed there.
Yeah. And so I'd like to see him move forward a little bit more. Barsha's not been bad, but I think between him moving and working with Alden now, there was a little bit of a curiosity as far as could we see a resurgence. Justin, not one of the younger guys in the class at this point, and it's like he's got speed, and anybody will say the guy puts in the work during the week. But curious to see whether or not moving to the Baker's program was going to increase the finishes that we see from Barsha. So, I don't want to dig too deep into it, man. It's two rounds. We've seen some mistakes. Aaron Plessinger, another rider, obviously had a bad night in San Diego, but I want to see him more in the fight. I want to see him pushing a little bit harder. We saw him grab a win. Can we see him do that again? At the moment, solely off of what I've seen, the answer is no. I don't believe that, though. I love the cowboy. And so I want to see him up there. I want to see him in the battle. I want to see him get some confidence, under the wings, and see whether or not he's able to start fighting as well. Because what's going to happen over this next weekend or two, you're going to stop seeing certain riders become championship contenders, and you're going to start to see them become dark horses. They're going to be the thorns of the series that can jump up and steal a win during the season. But like I said, those bad nights are their kryptonite. They take them out of actual title contention. So yeah, those are kind of the guys that I'm looking at as far as maybe seeing some better results from. Anderson, I didn't even realize Anderson finished that far back at the end of the main. Anderson, Barsha, Plessinger, those are kind of guys that I would like to see step up just a little bit more. Cooper as well, and actually start to get a little more in the fight. And even if they can't do it week in and week out, I want to see those guys snag a podium at one round here and there. Really just kind of throw a wrench in the plan, take a guy who was looking to podium every round. All of a sudden he finds himself in fourth or fifth place. So just keep it interesting. Keep the points moving around a little bit. I don't want to start to see big breakaways, even if it's just two or three riders. I want to see that top five stay as close as they can for as long as they can in this championship fight.
100%. I agree with you. Anaheim 2, give me your winners, both classes.
I agree. I'm going to go Hayden Deegan on the 250 class.
Okay.
I think he's got to respond, and I think he's got to respond now. So I think he takes the hype, takes the electricity, calms it down, puts it to good use. Taking Hayden Deegan in the 250 class, 450 class. I think it's time. I think it's going to be Jet. I think he's
Is
really,
A2 a triple crown?
don't know off the top of my head. And if that's the case, I might change my answer on the 450s. I'm not sure. Actually, I
It
know
usually
because
they do
man,
usually make that one a triple crown for whatever reason. I think the first triple crown they ever did was there.
if he can get those starts like he did in the heat race, I'm sticking with Jet. Yeah, I'm gonna go Hayden and Jet. I know it's a little cliche, but it's not so cliche this season, so everybody can hop off my ass and get with it, because that's what I'm saying is happening.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm actually going to be pretty boring as well. I'm going to go ahead and say that is it a triple crown or no? I don't think it is. Doesn't look like it. Round three, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it doesn't say anything about triple crown. So I think it's just a regular Supercross this coming weekend. I'm going to say and he's had success at Anaheim 2 before. Cooper Webb is going to be the top step of the podium. For the 450 class, and then yeah, in the 250 class, I'm gonna be boring and say there's gonna be Hayden Deegan. It's gonna be a big day for the Yamaha boys, I'm thinking.
I'm all about it. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see, I know Coop's coming back a little bit, but like I said, this is a strong start to a season for Cooper Webb. I know I'm a Moose Thor guy, but man, I thought the fly kit looked good this past weekend. The red and black with the blue, always, I'm a fan of it, no matter what name's on the gear. But no, I agree. I want him. I don't know, obviously, the status as far as where the thumb's at. I do think the sickness is playing into it a lot for this this last round, but I want him healthy. And yeah, I'd love to see him at the top step, another Carolina boy. So nonetheless, I don't care who's going to win. I just want it exciting. I want a race like what we just had because, man, that was until the checker flag flew. I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm yelling at the TV. That is what makes Supercross and SMX something that we all know and love.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. I appreciate you making some time for this. I'm looking forward to Arena Cross. You and I are going to break it down early next week. We'll do this again. For Brad Gebhardt, that's Zach Herron. Thank everybody for watching, everyone for listening. And yeah, we'll be back next week with another episode.
Welcome to Best 42 in the land. All ages from kids up to grown men walk through the gates of the coal miner's daughter to make a point clearer than the creek water. Now who's the best? Who's it gonna be in Hurricane Mills, Tennessee? Can you feel the adrenaline? Dirt flies hypnotized by the wind spin. Hear the crowd, everybody's whistling. Times this one week of racing could change your life. Everybody knows this is where it all begins. Do what you gotta do for 20 plus 2 out at the ranch. Golf carts, pit bikes, and rowdy fans play the national anthem and everybody stands. Smell the smoke from the two strokes riding by. The 30-second card's on its side. And charge!